This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Blockchain, artificial intelligence, machine learning. You know these, some of the latest big tech buzzwords. But here's a little secret. Silicon Valley is not the only place developing these technologies. China has its own new tech frontier, and some of the biggest technology advances in China are taking place in the countryside. Producer Alexa Lim has more.
You've probably heard of blockchain. It's that sometimes hard to understand decentralized anonymous ledger system. In the US, blockchain is usually talked about in terms of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. But in China, chicken farmers are using blockchain to monitor food safety. There are hundreds of millions of people living in the Chinese countryside, and Chinese big tech companies are investing in all sorts of projects in the country's rural areas. My next guest traveled through China to investigate how this technology is shaping the people and the countryside. Zhaowei Wang is author of Blockchain Chicken Farm and other stories of tech in China's countryside. They're also creative director for Logic Magazine, based out of Oakland, California. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you so much, Alexa.
Great to have you. So for this book, you looked at big tech in China and how this relates to the countryside. And you've also worked in tech in the US and have been researching this in China. So can you kind of step back a little bit and kind of lay out what big tech means in China? I mean, what does it mean through a Chinese lens?
That's a great question. In China, the landscape of tech, especially big tech, feels very different to me. So you have a big company like Alibaba and Tencent, and Alibaba is doing all these initiatives that are going into the countryside and trying to do rural revitalization. So there's e-commerce villages that are plugging into Alibaba's platform. Alibaba also has a sister company, which spun off Ant Financial, which provides a lot of the payment mechanisms to try and get people who are unbanked into the financial credit loan system. So it's really fascinating because you'll read these policy documents where these huge tech companies are trying to play almost the roles of like a development bank, as well as Ant Financial. They have initiatives that are actually planting trees to prevent desertification in Inner Mongolia. This struck me as very different than American big tech, where companies are saying and claiming that they're doing things for the social good, but you know, they're probably not necessarily doing kind of these more development bank, NGO type initiatives.
Right. And I do want to get back to that because that's kind of what you visit in your book. You visit all these different sites. But when you think of big tech, you don't really think about the countryside. So why were you interested in the rural areas in China? Why is that an important to technology development there?
When I first started doing research for this book, there was definitely the layer of the typical writing about Chinese tech, surveillance, cities, facial recognition on every corner. But as I dug in to both the actual numbers, I was also trying to think through this juncture of ecological and climate crisis and tech. And so as I dug in, I noticed 90% of the tech, maybe even more, that we're using is this invisible stuff that's being used to make sure that shipping containers filled with grain meet the port, algorithmic futures trading of commodities markets of grain, things like that. And so I became really interested in this actually large amount of tech that we use in our world that really isn't in the spotlight. And so it just made sense for me to finally just go into the countryside and see the tensions between big tech meeting this rural way of life.
Right. And in China, I mean, a large part of the population is in the countryside, right? So like the big tech companies can't ignore that population there.
Absolutely. And in China, the agrarian transition hasn't really fully happened yet. So yeah, you have a lot of people in the countryside. Does the government want them migrating to the cities all of a sudden? That's a lot of people. And so the question right now is this rural revitalization, how do we keep people in the countryside?
And also just kind of going back to definitions of what technology means in China. When we talk about new technologies and innovation in the US and Silicon Valley, there's this idea of disruption, right? And trying to find a hole in the marketplace, and it's largely profit motivated. But I mean, does innovation mean something different in China? Is there a different definition or role?
I talk about this in the Made in China chapter, where I touch upon the notion of shanzhai. And shanzhai is this word from Cantonese, which means mountain stronghold, but signifies kind of a knockoff culture. It's very scrappy. It doesn't, you know, have this sense of like, oh, we have to, you know, abide by IP. It's a phenomenon that has really yielded a ton of creativity, people pushing up against very black boxed, controlled technology. You know, when you look at an Apple iPhone, if it broke all of a sudden, you would have to take it to an Apple store. But shanzhai technology is all about designing tech that, you know, if you don't have this special $1,000 machine to take apart the phone, you could really repair it, and you would be allowed to repair it at your home. So I think that, you know, disruption has happened just in a different form.
And I want to talk about some of the specific initiatives and locations that you kind of visited. Like, the title of your book is called Blockchain Chicken Farm, and you visited one of these blockchain chicken farms called GoGo Chicken Farms. Can you kind of tell me what exactly is happening there?
It was very surreal. As it turns out, when I showed up to the GoGo Chicken Farm, which is in this beautiful area of China in Guizhou in the mountains, the farmer there was actually super sweet, super humble. And he had actually been raising free-range chickens for a long time, but people didn't want to pay a premium on what he was trying to sell, because there was such a low level of food safety and trust due to a number of food safety scandals. So along came this tech company from Shanghai who said, oh, we actually have this solution of blockchain. And so you just attach a little QR-plated bracelet to each of your chickens, and then people can scan the QR code and just see the whole life of the chicken, you know, how much it weighed at slaughter, and it can track the journey of the chicken's life, like from birth until the slaughterhouse. There's even a picture of the chicken. So these chickens are, funny enough, they're very heavily surveilled. There's like a geofence to make sure no one's like tampering with the feed and actually feeding them things that aren't grains. So that was a very surreal experience, just to be in Guizhou. And then when I asked the farmer, well, how do you feel about blockchain? He was just like, what are you talking about? What's blockchain?
So then how is blockchain good for like these chicken farms? Like, why use that type of technology?
Yeah, so blockchain, you know, as a ledger, it's tamper-proof. It's not easy to commit fraud on blockchain, and it's proposed as a solution to a wide variety of provenance cases. So when you want to track the supply chain of something. For Farmer Jiang, I think it also operated, given the technology, as a kind of perfect marketing ploy as well. I mean, the technology did work, but it was this added kind of shine that gave people the sense of safety that they were getting this perfect chicken.
And you have a quote in your book where you say, blockchain is just kind of shifting bureaucratic roles to a technical role. So, I mean, is this like filling a void that the government should be doing? Or, you know, is that, are they, they're like, great, yeah, sure, let's use blockchain for food safety.
Oh, absolutely. I think the government, much like the US government, is willing to let companies, especially tech companies, step in and try to address a number of social issues. So, you know, everything from blockchain chicken to NetEase, which is one of the world's biggest gaming companies, they're trying to solve the quality of pork meat. So they actually started a whole agricultural products branch where they're raising pigs. There's also like a really funny game that they briefly had. I don't know if it's still up, but you can play games on it and earn tokens and then buy their agricultural products. So that they're using, you know, tech to try and monitor pig health, during the hog farming process. A lot of tech companies are getting in on this food safety question.
Right. Sounds like they're gamifying pork. And they are a gaming company. They're like an internet gaming company, right? And is it a huge profit-making venture for them, too?
So right now, they have partnerships. So NetEase is the one that's like directly spinning off their own arm of agricultural products. I think actually the past year wasn't great for them given the African swine fever, ASF, in China. For Alibaba, they've actually done something really smart where all these smart agriculture initiatives, they're partnering with other agricultural companies. So they don't need to put as much investment into the actual physical infrastructure of farming. And as you know, great benefit to Alibaba, they're getting a lot of data out of this. So you just have tons of data being collected across these farms and improvement upon Alibaba's own AI models.
Right. So, I mean, it's not necessarily that different than what's going on here in terms of like what they're going after. It's kind of like data collection. And then talking about Alibaba, I mean, you have to talk about this. There's these e-commerce villages that are springing up. It's just like completely sponsored by Alibaba. How do those villages work?
So they were a strangely organic phenomenon at first. The specific village that I visited, it was actually the result of this pretty common larger pattern that happened, which is people from the countryside going into the city to work in factories, sending money home, and at some point, maybe moving back home. This one person, the first entrepreneur in the village, he had gone to the city and had to come back due to some family illness that he had to take care of. And he was like, oh, I heard about this thing. You know, you can sell stuff on Taobao. And he just got all the resources together, you know, borrowing money from a cousin to buy a computer. And he was telling me that he actually had to figure out how to type Chinese onto the computer. And he had to borrow his daughter's pinyin textbook to figure out how to do this. And his business, once it started becoming pretty successful and he was making stage play and performance costumes that would sell all across China, Alibaba started taking notice of like, oh, this Taobao village thing is pretty much, you know, a really great economic development model for rural areas. And actually, Alibaba has like a rural research institute now. And a lot of their focus is on encouraging these initiatives in other towns and also partnering with development banks to spread this throughout the world.
I'm Alexa Lim, and this is Science Friday from WNYC Studios. So then the farmers are like making the products and also selling it on Alibaba's kind of e-commerce site. Is that how it happens?
Exactly. Most of the time, in this village that I visited, it was just a garage workshop. I have images where it's people just cutting cloth using jigsaws on the workshop that's the first floor of their house and sewing these things, putting them together. So they're manufacturing this when they're not farming. And then when it's time to tend to the land, take care of the fields, they'll do that. Other villages, they're actually selling some agricultural products directly. So they're selling, I visited one place where they decided they would plant kiwis and they're selling that, also tofu, local products that they had made.
I mean, is it completely changing those villages though? Are they just going to become like these e-commerce places where, you know, you have to like make sure your ads are squared away and things like that?
There's an eerie sense. It's not a cheerful place. It wasn't a cheerful place for me to be because there's this influx of wealth in a huge way. A lot of haphazard, shoddy construction of these new village buildings. And yeah, it's also people are giving up. A lot of the younger folks too, I was told they're giving up their land entirely and leasing it out to bigger industrial agriculture companies so that they can focus on e-commerce full time and take advantage of how cheap things are in the countryside. as a competitive advantage over maybe a factory in the city. It's also really changing the ecology of these villages too. One place that I visited, they started growing chili peppers because it takes up less land, it's easier, it's more profitable. And, you know, that was in addition to their e-commerce businesses. And yet it was also an area where it maybe wasn't the most well-suited for chili growing. And so I definitely felt a lot of concern about that.
And, you know, there's the label Made in China. It kind of has this association now of cheap products. But I mean, what do you think Made in China will mean in the next 10 years?
I would like to see, and this is a complete, maybe too hopeful version. I would hope that Made in China is the sense that we can build technology from a decolonized standpoint that really gives openness and opportunity to different ways of being in the world. What I mean by that is I think a lot about the Shanzhai technology, where it is really about answering the needs of the user from the grassroots level. It's about making tech accessible. It's about ensuring that tech doesn't become this profit-driven intellectual property constant battle, and instead is really oriented towards people. Whether this will happen or not, I am actually not that optimistic, because I do think China is becoming more like the US in that sense, but I still hold some hope.
Thanks for joining us. Zhao Wei Wang is author of Blockchain Chicken Farm and Other Stories of Tech in China's Countryside. They're also creative director for Logic Magazine, based out of Oakland, California.
Thanks so much, Alexa.
For Science Friday, I'm Alexa Lim.